Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, and my goal is to take you on an inspiring journey of self-discovery and relationship recovery. I'm the host of the show, but this is really all about you, and it's for you, the single woman who wants to date smart and find the love of her life. On this show, casual sex is dumb, being choosy is smart, and the prize is a healthy, loving relationship that lasts. So call in, share your dating and relationship stories, ask the questions that keep you awake at night, and get coaching. The number to call in is 347-308-8511. That's 347-308-8511. Now, stay tuned for Love Strategies.
Well, you're listening to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome to the show. And if you've been here before, I'm so glad that you're back. On this show, is love at first sight real and can it last? Now there is new science to explain a very old dynamic. Plus, on this show, we're going to talk about living together and money. And how does that work if you're a couple? So love at first sight, it's a very well-known expression, but how real is it? Over the years in my career as a therapist and a coach and a counselor, I've heard so many couples say or talk about how quickly they fell in love. And some of them said that it was just almost instantaneous, that love at first sight phenomenon, and other people say that it takes or that it took weeks or months. You've probably heard more than one person in your life say, it was love at first sight. And of course, if you pay attention to all of the goings-on in the entertainment world, then you see this all the time. These, you know, movie stars and so on that meet one another and they're instantly madly in love. Well, the research tells us that it is possible to fall in love. In fact, it's possible to fall in love in as little as a fraction of a second. But I'm going to talk to you today about the reality. And the reality is that it doesn't always lead to lasting love. Sometimes, but very rarely does it lead to lasting love. And now we have the research to prove it. So one study that was conducted by Syracuse University professor Stephanie Ortig revealed that up to 12 areas in the brain are involved in falling in love. And the net result of all that brain activity is this feeling of euphoria, which is not really very different than the feeling that people get from using cocaine. That's how powerful it is when you're falling in love. And these researchers found that you could get into that state of mind in as little as a fifth of a second after meeting someone that you are powerfully attracted to. In a fifth of a second. It's amazing. They also found that the experience of love is based on processes that take place not just in the brain, but also in the heart and stomach. So when we talk about getting butterflies in the stomach around that special person that you're really wildly attracted to, well, guess what? You're really feeling that in your body. That is a physiological phenomenon that is for real. So falling in love instantly is real in the sense that, however you want to describe any brain or physiology process, yes, it's real in that sense. Whether or not that leads to real love is something we're going to take a deeper look at. So, you know, it's not very romantic to talk about love in the brain and in the body in this kind of physiology sense because it feels so incredibly real when it's happening. You don't think about brain chemistry when your eyes lock with your future partner's for the first time, but you're definitely at the effect of it. All 12 of those areas of your brain are working overtime, and the net result is that you are falling in love, whether it's instantaneously or whether it's happening over time, same processes are at work. And like most people, if you've ever had this happen to you, you probably thought you were making a good decision the last time you fell in love. But if you're reading, if you're listening to this show, well, odds are it didn't turn out so well because this is a show for singles. So that means that whenever you had that happen, it probably didn't turn out. And you know what? That is not terribly surprising because it turns out that all those chemical responses are designed to make you fall in love, but they are not designed for discerning whether somebody is good for you in the long run. That's a whole different set of processes than the ones that take place when you fall in love. Sociologist Helen Fisher says that it only takes seconds to size up a potential partner in terms of how we experience it. So in a flash, you know, we just sort of scan the other person visually, then we listen to their voice, and just like that, boom, a decision is made. Either we mentally pass, or we continue to get to know the person better. It's kind of a snap of the finger process, and it's the way our brains were designed, millions of years ago when we needed to instantly discern who or what might be a source of danger. So basically, the way we're wired is to instantly figure out, is this good or is this bad? Good, bad, good, bad. Brain is always trying to figure out, is it dangerous or not? Is it dangerous or not? Well, it would be great if we could figure all that out socially on a really accurate level, but we really don't. However, in those first few seconds, all these processes are going off. You don't really have any control over that. But after those first few seconds or even minutes, you do have a lot of control over that, and who knows what happens after that? It's different for everyone. Not everybody falls in love instantaneously. In fact, there are surveys that have been done of long-term couples that found that only a small percentage of them said that they fell in love instantly. Only a small percentage of long-term couples. Most long-term couples say that it took time, weeks or even months, to fall in love. And then if we're talking about the non-romantic kind of love, that deep-rooted, caring kind of love, that devoted kind of love, that takes a lot of time. And sadly, a lot of couples never get there because all they do is focus on the madly in love part and make all these life-altering decisions based on that without developing that deeper love. But the couples who really make it over the long term, those are the ones who do focus on that deeper kind of love. The problem with instant love or that instant falling in love feeling is that it really isn't very accurate about figuring out who's right for you and wrong for you. Couples who fall in love quickly also tend to have sex or get married quickly. And you know what comes after sex, right? Babies come after that. A lot of people have babies while they are madly in love, but they haven't yet gotten to the stage of the relationship of discovering if they are truly compatible and if they're really meant for the long run. That's why we end up with so many divorces and so many children that are growing up without two parents in the home. And for years and years in my practice, I've been an advocate of couples slowing down when they're dating, to discover if they're really compatible. Of course, most of the time people don't listen to me, but I do keep putting that message out there. Anecdotally, I've always known that there's a lot of wisdom in that, but now we have the research to prove it. There's a professor at the University of Texas at Austin by the name of Tom Houston who did a 13-year longitudinal study. Now, that length of time is significant because most divorces take place in the first 7 years of marriage. Studies have shown that if you make it past 7 years, you're far more likely to make it in the long run. So that's why he did 13 years. And he found that couples who had those steady, long courtship periods where they really became aware of each other's strengths and weaknesses. They got to know each other on a much deeper level, that those couples were far more likely to remain happily married over the long term. But those couples who had kind of those Hollywood romances, you know, those bursting, passionate courtships and almost overnight weddings, those couples quickly grew dissatisfied as spouses. And as you could predict, they were much more likely to divorce within that 7-year critical period of marriage. So while falling in love feels great, it very rarely leads to a satisfying long-term relationship. You're basically trading your long-term happiness for the short-term feel-good of all that euphoria and passion. And you know what comes along with that is the fantasy orientation. In other words, what you're really high on is your fantasy version of the person in front of you, which is not really the real-life version of that person. You haven't really gotten to that yet. But what you're doing when you rush into relationships is you're saying, I don't care so much about the long term. I care about this feeling I have right now. And, of course, the more euphoric the relationship, the higher the high in the beginning, and the faster the pace in the beginning, the harder the fall later on. And now we have the research that shows that. But the question is this: why do so many people rush into relationships? It's really a question that I've looked at so much in my career and wondered over the years, what is the reason for that? What is the motivation for rushing in so quickly? And by the way, it's not that every single couple who sprints forward and marries quickly, it's not that all of them fail and divorce acrimoniously later. Most of them do, but not all of them. There are rare exceptions, couples who meet and marry quickly and it turns out really well, but those exceptions are so very rare that it's the equivalent of basically taking your life savings and going to Las Vegas and putting it all on the roulette wheel and spinning it, because you want to make that instant wealth. You want the instant gratification, instant satisfaction of a really rushed up relationship, but you're taking a gigantic risk with your life. And I do think it's like your life savings and money. It's your emotional life savings that you are putting on the line when you rush into a relationship. So why do couples rush forward when it makes far more sense to slow down, to be more thoughtful about your choice, something so significant as your choice of life partner makes sense to slow down about it. But why don't couples do that? Why do so many people rush? In a word, it's fear. That's right, it's really fear that makes people rush into relationships. Now, you wouldn't normally associate fear with love, but here is how it works. The early stage of love is exciting. It's so exciting. But excitement and fear are actually very close together in the brain, so close, in fact, that we can't always distinguish which it is. Sometimes people don't know the difference between when they are feeling a little bit of anxiety and fear versus feeling really excited. And the excitement, the experience of excitement, is that euphoria of feeling that you have found your soulmate. That's what you get so excited about. But the fear that goes along with that kind of euphoria and excitement is that you will lose yourself in the overwhelming immersion into this new love relationship, that you might lose yourself, that you'll make a mistake, and that you will get hurt. That's the underlying fear, whether you are conscious of it or not. But there's another kind of fear that's going on, and this one is really a paradox. The other fear is that somehow you're going to mess it up and lose this wonderful person, that you'll do something to screw it up, and this amazing person will walk out the door and take your heart when he or she bolts. So here's how that play gets activated. Deep down, there's a part of you that is saying, maybe I should slow this down just a little bit. Maybe this is moving too quickly. I can't tell you how many times clients have sat in front of me in my office and said, I've met someone new. I'm so in love. This person is so fantastic. And after talking with them, they begin to think, well, maybe I should slow it down a little bit. But when you try to slow down this brand new passionate romance, in effect, you're kind of pushing back. You're pushing back a little bit, and you're sending the message to the other person, yes, I'm crazy about you, but, and it's that huge but hanging out there that rocks the boat. The but is really you saying, well, let's be a little smart about this. Let's try to be sensible. Let's try to get more grounded in this thing. Let's take our time and make sure we're really compatible. However, being on the other end of that but is like a bucket of cold water over your head. I've been that bucket of cold water for people when they're my clients and they're falling madly in love and want to rush forward. I'll be the bucket of cold water. But imagine if your partner is being the bucket of cold water. Imagine that you're falling madly in love and you're wanting to rush ahead, and then your partner says, you know what, I'm crazy about you too, but we need to slow down. Well, the problem is that that bucket of cold water can so easily be interpreted this way. Oh, I see. Okay, I get it. You have doubts. You are not as sure about me as I am about you. I see that. I get it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And with that comes the problem in the relationship. You know, ideally, it would be interpreted a whole different way. It would be more like, oh, I get it. You're really serious. You are really serious about me and about us, and you're marriage-minded, you're intentional about having this be something that works, be a lasting relationship. You want us to build a strong foundation so we have better odds of success. I mean, wouldn't it be great if you could interpret it that way, if the person you're dating could interpret it that way? That would be just grand. But most people don't hear it that way. Instead, they hear it that you're just not as gung-ho as they are. And with that comes the fear activation in the brain. Wow, a disaster is now happening. This wonderful budding romance now got this bucket of cold water on it, and are we going to make it? Now the boat is really rocking. But if you're like most people, you don't stop to think through all of that. The way we operate as human beings is that we make these flash decisions, and then we explain it logically. We make most of our life decisions based on how we feel. Then we decide and we explain ourselves with logic. So the flash decision when you're rushing forward into a new romance is to keep on sprinting. That's the decision. Oh, I just can't keep on going. I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to mess things up. This is so great. This person is so, I don't want to be the bucket of cold water. So the flash decision you make, keep sprinting forward. But the reason you're doing it is because you're fearful that if you slow down, you will cause the other person to bolt. Or another fear that people get into is, if I slow down and really let them get to know me, they might discover some things about me that I don't want them to find out. That's the other one that comes up. But here's how you explain it to yourself when you're sprinting forward in a new relationship. If you're like most people, this is how you explain it. You say, wow, oh, this guy is so different. He is everything I've ever looked for. He is, oh my gosh, he's so wonderful. He does this, he does that. I feel so loved by him. I just feel like I've found my soulmate. And this time, it's really going to work, because this time I have found someone who is really my soulmate, who is really right for me. How many times have you heard yourself say, this guy is different? How many times have you said that to your friends? or your therapist. I can't tell you how many times I've had clients tell me that. This one's different. No, really, Nina, this one's different. I tell you, he is different. But here's the problem with that kind of self-talk, and that is self-talk that is then expressed outwardly to the rest of the world. The problem with that kind of self-talk is that you've already decided. You know this person for a few days or weeks, and you're now telling yourself, he's the one. When we come back from this short break, I'm going to explain to you why it is that we so desperately need to declare someone is the one so early in a relationship, and why it is that we can't back off of that position, the trouble that we get ourselves into as a result of it. So stay tuned. We'll be back with more love strategies after this short break.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
Welcome back to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host. Today we're talking about love at first sight. Is it real and can it last? And just before the break, I was talking about how we come to the decision that the brand new love in our lives is the one. And so this kind of self-talk gets started, which then is extended out into the world. This guy is really different. He's everything I've looked for. He's so wonderful. This one is the one. You've already decided, even though you've only known him a few days or weeks. But here's the thing. One of the greatest needs that we have as human beings is to feel that we are right. It's literally linked in with a sense of survival in the world. We need it so much that we get addicted to it. And once you have to be right about something, even something like this, your choice of a life partner whom you barely know, that the problem is that whether you realize it or not, you've put on blinders. You now have to prove to yourself and everyone around you that he really is the right guy. So you will only see evidence that proves he's a good guy, and you will block out any evidence that might be telling you that he is not. Or maybe he's a good guy, but there may be evidence that is screaming at you that you are not compatible with this person. You don't share the same values. You don't want the same things out of life. You are not on the same page about the major issues around which couples need to organize themselves, need to be on the same page about if they're going to be together in the long run. Things like your spiritual beliefs, the issue of whether or not to have children, how to raise your children, dealing with family, dealing with money, how you communicate, how do you fight and solve conflicts. So when you're dating someone over a long period of time, the evidence eventually shows itself, but if you're rushing into a relationship and rushing into a marriage, you don't see those things, and in fact, you may be putting on those blinders by convincing yourself. In effect, you kind of hypnotize yourself right at the get-go to believe that you found your soulmate. And it doesn't matter what kind of evidence shows up after that. Those blinders are firmly in place. But I see it a different way. This whole thing of slowing down when you're falling in love with someone, I see it differently. Slowing down a really passionate, wonderful love connection actually can inject some maturity into the equation. It can open the door. It can give you an opportunity as a couple to work through something for the first time. You will find yourself having a much deeper discussion about how to manage yourselves as a couple if you do this slowing down thing. So, for instance, let's say that you tell the guy that you're falling madly in love with, I'm crazy about you, but we need to take this a little slower. Let's, you know, we've only known each other for 10 days. We don't need to see each other 5 nights a week. Let's see each other 2 or 3 nights a week for a while. Let's spread this out. Let's pace this. And you're taking the risk when you do that, that you're rocking the boat and that you're going to create some kind of a feeling in him that you don't feel the same way. Well, guess what? That gives you a chance to talk about it. So if he says, oh, well, are you having doubts? Are you just not feeling like this is the right relationship? Gives you a chance to say, no, I'm not having any doubts at this point. I'm just acknowledging that we don't know each other that well yet. I have a wonderful feeling about you. I think we have a wonderful possibility of having found the right person, but I want us to get grounded. I really want to see us take our time here so that we have deep roots. I'd like for us to be the kind of couple that can really make it in the long run. And I believe that it takes time to build that kind of a connection. It just doesn't happen overnight. That's why I'm suggesting that we slow this thing down. And of course, if you listen to my show and if you've read any of my books, then you know that I recommend that slowing down means you put off sex for a significant period of time, because once people become sexual, they're a couple. You've really already made the decision, and now it's just a matter of, is it going to work out or are you going to break up? So it doesn't work to dive right in bed with somebody. So that's part of the discussion as well. One of the things that you may find out if you slow down, if you take this advice and you're in a brand new relationship and you decide to slow it down, one thing that you will quickly discover is how emotionally fragile you are and how fragile your lover is, your new partner, your new potential partner. Here's the thing. Emotionally strong people can afford to take their time. Emotionally strong people don't fall apart just because they're seeing each other for 2 or 3 times a week rather than every day. They don't fall apart because they didn't see each other for a couple of days. Emotionally strong people don't need instant gratification. They're in it for the long haul. They don't need a Hollywood romance. It's like a Roman candle going off and then crashing and burning. Emotionally strong people trust that over time the truth of what they have together will emerge, and that if that turns out to be something that does not work out, they can handle it. Emotionally mature people are resilient. They're able to weather that process. They don't feel like they're going to break just because they haven't instantly bonded and meshed every aspect of their lives. You know, anyone can fall in love. Anyone can fall in love quickly, but it takes a mature person to both fall in love and build a lasting love. Two different processes, two completely different processes. Falling in love is all about chemistry. You don't have any control over that. You have control over whether you act on the falling in love. But building a lasting love takes patience. It takes tons of communication. It takes a lot of exploration and discovery. It takes a lot of asking questions to uncover who you are and what matters most to you. How do do you get along? How do you blend friendships, extended family, work, and so on into your relationship together? All that takes patience to discover. So pacing your relationship over time, you know, that conventional wisdom of getting to know you? Well, it actually turns out to be really good advice. When you pace your relationship, you trade that instant gratification of fueling the passion in favor of a long-term benefit, and that is of building a powerful foundation for a lasting love. Instead of a sprint, it turns out the best relationships are marathons. Well, the cornerstone of the advice and temptations of the single girl is how to emotionally pace your relationships. What are the right behaviors and the right conversations to have so you have a better possibility of success? So be sure and get it and read it if you haven't already. And guys, any guys listening, I'm in the process of writing a book now called Date Like a CEO, just for men, coming out later this year. It's all about how to have leadership, not control, as a man in your search for a wonderful woman to love and be loved by. Well, I've got somebody writing in with a question. Anne is writing in, and she is asking this question. She says, "Hi, Nina, I'm so excited that I found your show and all of your resources. I'm 49, very attractive, divorced for over 6 years, and I tend to get involved with men who don't want to commit. I was in a relationship for 5 years after my separation and divorce, and he just couldn't commit to marriage, which is what I wanted, and I finally left knowing he wouldn't change. I've been out there on the internet dating and met some nice men, but nothing has materialized. I'm trying to do some soul searching and read as much as I can about smart dating and picking another partner. I think I would really like to get married again, but it just seems hopeless. So many men are set in their ways and really just want someone to date and do. And I've ordered your book and audio tapes, and I have a couple of questions about online dating. So I was communicating with a guy who said he was 58 on the site. I looked him up on Facebook and found out that he was over 62. I'm not interested in dating someone in their 60s, and I found it a lame excuse for his lying about his age. It was just annoying. And the other thing is about telling people that I'm interested in marriage. It seems to scare so many guys away, and I'm not interested in just marrying anyone, which a lot of guys might think when they find your profile and you say that. Well, Anne, thank you for writing. I hope that you are reading Temptations of the Single Girl, because it's going to answer a lot of your questions about how to meet a commitment-ready guy. And as far as stating that you are interested in marriage, don't give up, because there are tons of wonderful men out there. It's an ever-changing field of possibilities, and a lot of them are very marriage-minded. Just the other day, I had a friend tell me about her widowed friend who's not yet ready to date, but he will be. He'll be on the market in a few months, and he'll be married again because he's the marrying type. And he's in his 50s. He's very healthy, good-looking, works out, smart and successful, very loving. He will be someone's wonderful mate. No, I can't introduce you to him. But my point is this. You have to stay out there searching, because every day someone new goes online and puts up a profile. And if you do tend to attract men who don't want to commit, you have to do the inner work. It's an inside job to change what you attract. And I know that reading the book is going to help you do that. But also on the lying thing on the internet, it is troublesome, but studies show that the vast majority of people online lie about something. And the top three things, of course, are age, height, and weight. Sometimes people lie about age in order to be put in a different search engine category on the site, especially those who look a lot younger than their age. And I can't blame them for doing that, but as long as they tell people the minute they make contact, hey, I'm really 51, though my profile says 49. I did that because I didn't want to be ruled out so quickly. I don't recommend you do that unless you feel really comfortable about it and you're willing to take the knocks, because some people are going to see you as dishonest and write you off. But the better strategy, the far better strategy, is to be honest about your age and then do a fair amount of reaching out to people in those age categories that you think might have ruled you out. If you do that, they will be flattered. They'll be interested if they like your profile, even though they may have thought they wouldn't want to date someone your age. And now let's get to your issue on age. Don't be too harsh about people who do sometimes lie. The difference between 58 and 62 is not that significant. And maybe that's why that guy did that. But on that subject, why wouldn't you date someone in his 60s? You see how you're ruling out a whole age category. But if he's a wonderful guy who stays in great shape, he's very healthy, he's full of life and energy, he looks younger than his age, he is younger than his age, and he's crazy about you, why wouldn't you date him? You see, attraction is really, is not a function of age. It is so many other things. What a lot of people do on the internet is limit their search criteria, thinking, oh, anybody who's over 60 is going to be just an old guy, an old fart. I don't want to date that guy, so I'm not going to date anyone. No, you need to really widen your search criteria, age-wise and in other ways. Do the narrowing down once you make contact. If you cast a wider net, you will have more, you know, I hate to use a silly analogy, but you'll have more fish to choose from. Okay, I want to switch now to a different but kind of related topic, and that is living together. So all the latest research shows that more and more couples are choosing to live together before they get married. Sounds like a good idea, right? You get to know each other a whole lot better. You know if you're really compatible because you've had to negotiate the details, the everyday living together situations. You're in each other's lives on a daily basis, so surely you can really get to know each other better. A lot of people think that you will divorce-proof your future marriage because you're marrying someone you really know well. But living together before marriage may not be the divorce-proofing mechanism that you think it is. In fact, a lot of studies show that couples don't have any greater success from living together, and in some instances, they have less success from living together before marriage. Well, here are some of the problems that you'll encounter and some of the things you need to think about before you lease that condo or buy that house together. First of all, why are you moving in together? What is the purpose of moving in together? One of the worst reasons that I hear couples say for moving in together is to save on the rent. So one of your leases just came up for renewal, and you get in this conversation about why are we wasting all this extra money on a separate living place when we're already spending 5 or 6 nights a week together. Why not move in, combine our bills, save money, or we're just adding 2 more days of the week in our couple time? Well, the problem is that couples who move in together to save on the rent money often do not discuss where the relationship is going. They neglect to get to the heart of the matter, that we're moving in together because we see a real future together, and this is a step toward marriage. Now, without really declaring that out loud through many thoughtful discussions, there's a huge risk of this grand misunderstanding, because it often turns out months or years later when one person is now saying, well, heck, you know, why are we living together? Why aren't we talking about marriage? It turns out that one of those two people was living together because they wanted companionship, they wanted to save money, but they really had no intentions of moving the relationship toward marriage, while the other person thought all this time that it was a step toward marriage. So if you decide to live together with someone, you must have an in-depth understanding about where your relationship is headed. If you are not on the same page that it is a step toward marriage, I don't recommend that you do it. Wait until you are on that same page together. This is a step toward marriage. That is really our intention. And here's another big issue that comes up, the issue of money. I recently heard a caller on another radio show with a question about money. Well, I'll call this woman Rachel. So Rachel was wondering if she had the right to ask her live-in boyfriend about his bill payment priorities, because she was beginning to feel that maybe their arrangement was not fair. Their deal when they moved in together was that he would pay for the house and all the utilities, and it was his house before, and it was still his house, only his name on the title and the mortgage. Well, she, after moving in, began spending lots of money on decorating his house to the point that she was going deeply into credit card debt. Now she was wondering if she should start asking him to pay some of those bills. Now, it raises a huge question. Where are they headed? If they're headed toward marriage, then it's definitely time for this couple to sit down and begin thinking about how it's going to eventually be our money once we get married, And what are our values around spending and debting? What is our budgeting process going to be? All those kinds of conversations you need to have. But if you haven't yet defined the relationship, then in essence you are roommates who happen to sleep together. And you're splitting the bills, you keep your money separate, and of course, on some level that feels weird, especially if you're the person who wants this to be a step toward marriage. You're not really fully a couple until you have to share money and all the inherent issues. So the bottom line on money and living together is this. It defines the relationship if you haven't bothered to define it. If you're splitting bills and you don't know each other's inflows and outflows, that says you're roommates with no particular commitment toward marriage. If, on the other hand, you are having open, honest discussions about money, you know each other's income and bills, and you're making budgeting decisions together, then you're probably headed toward marriage. So it's interesting how the way that you handle money really defines your relationship. And by the way, it defines it after marriage. I've known couples who keep their money separate after they get married, and I'm sure that there are a lot of good reasons to think about doing that, but there are a lot of bad reasons as well, because you don't ever quite make it to that we are a team status until you share money and share the decisions about incomes, outflows, bills, retirement, savings, spending, debting, all those things. Money is a huge hot topic. It is the number one reason that people divorce, is because they discover down the road that they are completely incompatible about money. They never got it sorted out. You have to be able to do that as a couple. All right, well, I hope today's show has been helpful to you. I hope that you will be able to take some of the advice and slow down a bit in your relationships when you're falling madly in love. Falling in love is a wonderful, wonderful feeling. I wouldn't trade those early months in my relationship with my husband, the feelings that we had together, I wouldn't trade that for anything. But I will tell you that we took the time to build a strong foundation, and that's why we're still together well over a decade later and still love each other very dearly. I hope you'll be able to do the same. I hope that you will think about some of these issues before you move in together with someone and make those decisions in a very wise and thoughtful way. Your choice of person that you share your life with is one of the biggest that you'll ever make in your life. I hope that you will be thinking more about that choice. Do visit my website, singlescoach.com, and stay tuned for this final message, and I hope I'll hear you back on a future show.
Thank you for joining us at Love Strategies. Be sure and visit the premier website for single men and women who want to date smart, singlescoach.com. Sign up for the newsletter and you'll get notifications for this show as well as other free dating tips. If you want a coach to support you in your growth and recovery, go to Singles Coaching on the website and choose personal coaching. That's it for today, and be sure and tune back in for more love strategies so you can date smart and find the love of your life.